Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Two float planes with an estimated total of 16 people on board crashed Monday afternoon in the Georgia Inlet area near Ketchikan. At least 10 of those people survived. Rescue crews are searching for the rest. U.S. Coast Guard Petty Officer John Paul Rios said around 1:30 p.m. Monday that they received notice of the accident about 40 minutes earlier, and all information is preliminary.
We immediately launched multiple assets to include an MH-60 from Air Station Sitka, which is one of our helicopters, along with two small boats from Coast Guard Station Ketchikan.
Rios says the small boats were on scene along with local rescue crews and Good Samaritans looking for anyone in the water. Rios says the cause of the accident is unknown.
We don't know if the incidents were, if one had hand in the other. We don't know. But that's all stuff that we're looking into. But as of right now, safety of life at sea is of the utmost importance, so that's what we're focusing on.
At about 3:30 p.m., Jeffrey Kiefer of Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad told KRBD that the De Havilland Beaver and Otter were both in the water when rescue crews arrived at the scene.
Both of them were near shore, one on one side of Georgia Inlet, one on the other side.
Kiefer says the beaver was upside down in salt water near the beach, close to Mahoney Lake. Crews hadn't been able to determine whether anyone was inside, and no passengers were found nearby. The otter was on the other side of the inlet.
At that point, there were 10 patients on the beach.
Kiefer says there were various injuries among those passengers. He says some were taken to town by an Allen Marine boat, others were taken to town by helicopter, and then to the hospital by ambulance. Kiefer says it's not yet known how many people were on board the beaver. A De Havilland beaver can carry up to 8, including the pilot. Kiefer declined to identify which airlines own the planes. Alaska lawmakers say that they're getting tough on crime with a new bill to lengthen prison sentences. It would reverse many of the pieces of Senate Bill 91, the 2016 legislation that many Alaskans blame for a spike in crime. But the new bill comes with a big price tag. And as Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, not everyone agrees that it will work.
Doug Elkins has a certain degree of expertise with the criminal justice system.
I started when I was 12 years old, and I'm 63, so I've been in and out of prison since the 70s.
Elkins is talking from the offices of Partners for Progress, an organization that helps ex-prisoners with what's called re-entry into society. Elkins says his most recent sentence ended just last month. He says he's working on getting clean and went to a drug treatment program in prison, but what he says was a 20-month sentence didn't solve his problems.
For 20 months, I sat in jail not wanting to do nothing but get high. And then once I got out, that's exactly what I did. I went and got high. Going to jail, all that's going to do is remove you from the situation for a minute.
A 20-month prison term costs Alaska $100,000, according to state estimates. Cutting down on imprisonment for nonviolent criminals was policymakers' goal when in 2016 they passed Senate Bill 91, a major restructuring of Alaska's criminal justice laws. The idea, supported by both in-state and out-of-state research, was that longer prison sentences aren't shown to keep prisoners from committing more crimes once they get out. So SB 91 reduced sentences for nonviolent crimes and budgeted some of the savings to boost drug treatment and programs to help people transition from prison back to regular life. Almost immediately, the changes faced a backlash.
To the criminals and to the rapists and molesters who see our children as nothing more than opportunities, I say this to you. We will do everything in our power to stop you, apprehend you, and put you in prison for a very long time.
That was Governor Mike Dunleavy at his State of the State speech earlier this year, where he pledged to repeal and replace SB 91. Critics of the law like Dunleavy have tied it to a spike in crime in Alaska. It's true that both violent and nonviolent crime has been rising sharply in recent years. But that trend started before SB 91 took effect, and there's no research that definitively links the two. Supporters of the repeal cite research that's shown higher incarceration rates to have some effect on reducing crime rates. John Novak is the Anchorage District Attorney, and he rejects the idea that SB 91 just coincided with a crime wave driven by other factors. He says he and his colleagues in law enforcement feel like SB 91 deprived them of the tools they need to make Alaska safe.
We're all frustrated. We're in this business to try to make our community safer, and it's a very uncomfortable discussion when we interact with our neighbors and our friends and our community members, and they look at us like, what are you doing? I don't know how many more murders and auto thefts and whatnot we need to show that it doesn't work.
Many elements of SB 91 have already been repealed. Now, near the end of the legislative session, lawmakers are debating a bill to reverse even more of them, including by lengthening prison terms. One provision makes second-time drug possession a felony. Altogether, it could cost the state tens of millions of dollars a year and force the reopening of a shuttered prison in Palmer. Kathleen McLaughlin, who runs the Anchorage Reentry Center, says she's worried about lawmakers throwing out parts of SB 91 that she thinks have been working, like boosting support for programs outside of prison, like hers. She says the big failure of the legislation was not in reducing sentences, but in not doing even more to address mental health problems or drug addiction.
We have to acknowledge that we have not lived up to that promise of SB 91. We refer people all the time to get assessments and treatment. They're never timely.
McLaughlin says some of her center's clients have severe mental health problems. And until they're stabilized, she says it's likely they'll go on to commit more crimes, tougher sentences or not. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
State officials are documenting air quality in Juneau to determine if harmful pollutants are showing up from cruise ships or other sources. Juneau Empire reports the state in late April installed 21 monitors around downtown Juneau. They're part of the first ambient air quality study in the capital in more than a decade. Monitors measuring sulfur dioxide also were installed. The monitors use lasers to measure fine particulate. The inhalable particles can cause respiratory illness, aggravated asthma, heart attacks, and premature death. Anna Bruninger of the State Division of Air Quality says officials have not drawn conclusions from early data collected in Juneau. A Juneau woman is at the center of a federal lawsuit against the company that employs the people who give out samples at Costco. The suit alleges the company violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is the federal agency that enforces anti-discrimination laws in the workplace. It filed suit on May 8th against Club Demonstration Services, or CDS, which employs the people who give out samples inside Costco stores. The commission alleges the company denied Terry Baker reasonable accommodations for a medical condition affecting her bladder, which led her to repeatedly endure humiliating work shifts and ultimately to lose her job. The complaint says Baker made several requests, backed by doctor's notes in 2017, for extra bathroom breaks at work. She had had the position since May of 2016, but her manager said in June 2017, bathroom breaks were limited to only lunch and scheduled breaks. That, the commission alleges, was too infrequent for Baker's condition. By late September, the complaint says work had become intolerable for Baker. CDS severed employment a few days later. CDS did not return requests for comment, but the EEOC complaint quotes a letter from Baker's human resources contact for the Northwest region denying her accommodations. The HR letter says it would pose an undue hardship to the company and/or necessitate the elimination of essential job functions of her position. A CDS job listing for a position like Baker's says candidates must be able to stand comfortably for 6 hours a day. The complaint says in addition to Baker's bladder issues, her condition also substantially limited her ability to stand and walk. With the lawsuit, Baker seeks her job back with the accommodations she requested, back pay plus interest, compensation for emotional pain and suffering, and punitive damages for malicious and reckless conduct. It says dollar amounts should be determined at trial. A potential challenger has emerged to run against Republican U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan next year. Dr. Alan Gross, a 57-year-old orthopedic surgeon, is announcing interest in running as an independent this week.
I don't think that Dan Sullivan's representing the people of Alaska. I don't think he's addressing the issues that are important to the state, the economy. He's most of all not standing up to fix our broken health care system. But on many other levels, I feel like he's not being representative of the state, and he's not helping fix the problem which is biggest in the state, which is our economy, which has been in recession for years and years. And we need to break out of that.
Gross is the son of the late Avram Gross, Alaska's Attorney General under Governor Jay Hammond in the 1970s. He was born and raised in Juneau. He also lived in Petersburg and now Anchorage. Gross plans to make a formal announcement of launching an exploratory committee on Tuesday in Petersburg. After that, he'll tour the state. And finally, looking at weather, tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 40. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, highs around 60. That's it for the KTUO News Update for Monday, May 13th, 2019.